When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
This is the Red Box Podcast. I'm Matt Chorley. Coming up on today's episode, as political parties hit the road ahead of the elections on Thursday, all taking part in increasingly silly stunts to catch the photographer's eye, we count down the best and worst political photo ops ever, including speaking to some of the people who were behind them. But first, as ever, we kick off with our columnist panel. It's Monday, so it must be Liberace, Libby Purvis and Rachel Sylvester. Talk about rules and whether or not they matter in politics. Let's not get bogged down in the ins and outs of flats, because people get cross if we do that too much. But over the weekend, the Scottish Conservative leader Douglas Ross said that if Boris Johnson is found to have broken the ministerial code on any of the things that he may or may not have got up to, he would have to resign. However, we have seen in recent times, you know, Priti Patel was found to have broken the ministerial code but was allowed to stay because she didn't know that she was bullying people and that sort of thing. Does it matter? What's the point of the ministerial code, Libby, if there are no repercussions for breaking it?
I think we have to have it. Of course, it matters. And I can see the problem for all these Conservative Party MPs and members. You can't be seen to shrug it off and pretend that small peccadilloes don't matter, because in the end, they will actually snowball into real corruption. But I do actually think, I know you don't want to talk about wallpaper, but in this case, it is just infuriating, because it's tempting to say, you know, there's this chaotic situation that the Prime Minister's been in. He's been ill and a new baby and a new fiancé. And it's tempting to say, for God's sake, this is wasting a lot of time and energy. He's paid up. It's a public building. In the long run, he'll get nothing for it. Whoever succeeds him will have to live with the absolutely ghastly nouveau naff Lulu Little nonsense that they've bunged in. I don't care. So I think it's very difficult. You have to guess what is a peccadillo and what is something which could snowball. In this case, it feels like a peccadillo to me.
What do you think, Rachel?
Well, on the point about rules, I do think the rules matter. And what we're seeing is the sort of system depends really on, you know, that old Peter Hennessy thing about the good chap theory, that prime ministers are in charge of policing the system and the ministerial code, because prime ministers appoint ministers. But that really depends on having a prime minister who does take the view that the rules matter, that if his ethics advisor says somebody needs to go. He has to take that seriously, or she has to take that seriously. And Boris Johnson just isn't like that. He doesn't think the rules apply to him. And he's been like that forever and a day in his private life and in his public life. But I think when it comes to the ministerial code, it really does matter. There's a really interesting test case coming up, because the civil service union, the FDA, they've got permission to bring a judicial review against the Priti Patel ruling on exactly this point, where they're saying, hang on a minute, why should civil servants have to abide by one set of rules and ministers be exempt? So the thing is, the big picture is that the system depends on prime ministers behaving decently and having a sort of good chap approach to life. And I think at the moment we've got a prime minister who doesn't really behave like that. And that's the issue. So it's how you get around that. Without a sort of more legal framework, it's quite hard to see how you do.
And the point is that if one side thinks they're not going to abide by the rules anymore, it makes it very difficult for them to insist that others do. And part of the reason why Douglas Ross, the Scottish Tory leader, has had to say that Boris Johnson would have to resign is that he was very keen on the idea that Nicola Sturgeon would have to resign if she'd been found to have broken the ministerial code in Scotland. So to some extent, if you want to be able to attack your rivals, then you need to sign up to the rules yourself, Libby.
That's absolutely right. Yes, and I think that some of the other breaches and potential breaches, like the Priti Patel one, matter actually more than the current Boris one. And I think the generic thing also that bothers me as well. So, but it is just very difficult that all this has come down to this sort of sitcom nonsense, you know, about about an extravagant fiance wanting gold wallpaper, and it's a distraction. I mean, the other things matter more, and they're not talked about nearly as much.
But isn't the point that we don't know yet whether the ethics advisor is going to say that the ministerial code has been breached? Possibly, you know, he'll come up with some sort of careful wording that doesn't conclude that. We don't know. But my point is just that if the ministerial code is declared to have been breached by a sort of actual ethics advisor, then that has to be taken seriously. So that's sort of not really to do with wallpaper. It's to do with the principle and the integrity of the system.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Let's move on, Libby, and talk about your column today. You've touched on this Noel Clarke situation. Is obviously the actor. He was given an award by BAFTA, despite being told privately, anonymously in some cases, about his behaviour. And since then, it's all kicked off. Some women came forward. 20 women came forward to The Guardian. He's been dropped by BAFTA, his agent. TV shows he's been in have been pulled. I detect from the noise that you just made, have you already had quite a reaction to your column today?
Not enormously, thanks to the gallant Times moderators who go through all this stuff. But I just wanted to poke this particular hornet's nest, because sexual arrogance on one side, mob media justice on the other. I thought that BAFTA behaved ridiculously in carrying on when they were suspicious and then panicking over a newspaper report, making everything worse than it was in the first place. But the wider thing I wanted to say is, look, we're having a cultural shift because of Me Too and Time's Up and all the recent cases. Everyone knows it's absolutely toxic to be accused of sexual misbehaviour, even if there's been no criminal trial and no civil case, and that it ruins people. And think of Kevin Spacey. And so that is now a weapon. It's a weapon in the hands of victims. If networks and managers just pull themselves together from their dazed incompetence about famous golden geese and create proper safe routes for complaint, which can be anonymous and not lose women their jobs, then sharp warnings can be given early. And it's kind of part of everyone's role to speak up early. If somebody had taken on Noel Clarke from below and from above early on and saying, look, you can't carry on like this, you can't make sexual jibes at women, you know, just be a bit more respectful, grow up, then we wouldn't have lost what is probably quite a big talent. And we've lost a lot of big talents, and we're going to lose more of them. If this goes on, this sort of hopeless anonymity. The only conclusion I really make in the thing is that basically the networks are both managerially incompetent in not creating proper HR rules for complaint, and they're absolute arrant cowards when they start to be found out by The Guardian for not having taken action. So it's a showbiz, show trials don't help. And I think the whole thing, there's responsibility on both sides, and it needs to be looked at more levelly.
What do you think, Rachel? Because it is one of those things where everyone now rushes out, whether it's TV companies or agents and so on, to condemn Noel Clarke. But presumably, given how widespread the issue of his behaviour seems to have been, it's not like everyone was completely in the dark about this.
No, I think where I agree with Libby is that I just don't understand why BAFTA didn't take seriously these allegations before they gave the award. What seems to have been sort of the pendulum swinging from ignoring it to then rushing to judgment too late. But where I think I slightly differ with Libby is that I do think that we have to recognise it's incredibly good and strong and powerful that now women are coming out and saying this, and that the culture that's developed, with all this sort of filming naked auditions and all that kind of thing, it just seems totally unacceptable. And so it's really good that people are calling that out, and that mustn't be belittled. And it does take bravery to do that, I think, even many years on. But I would agree that there needs to be it needs to be nipped in the bud right now and, you know, at the time, rather than it being too retrospective. But if it is being dealt with retrospectively, then that's surely a good thing.
It's better late than never.
I think if women, if women can now understand that it is probably A, safer, and B, far more effective to nip it in the bud early and fast, then we would not be, you know, we would not have these terrible sort of retrospective witch hunts. I am quite tired of women being told they're incredibly brave for speaking out, you know, 10 years later or whatever. I don't find that incredibly brave at all.
But I think women would now speak out much more immediately. I think there was a sort of culture of secrecy, certainly in Hollywood, that you think about how long it took and how powerful somebody like Harvey Weinstein was. And it was difficult to take that on. And it was brave. And it did take years. And a sort of journalist really spending a long time building that case and talking to lots and lots of people to substantiate the allegations. So I think power does have a silencing and oppressive effect. And the power imbalance had got completely out of kilter over many years. And it's good if that's now being redressed.
That's Libby Purvis and Rachel Sylvester there. Of course, you can read them both in the Times every week. Just go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next, the best and worst political photo ops ever.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
How
would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast. Now, say cheese. Yes, yeah, election day, local election day, Scottish elections, Welsh elections, all happening this Thursday. So loads of politicians are going to be out and about doing their best and possibly worst photo opportunities. So we thought this was a good excuse to take a look at the best ever political photo stunt. The World Cup of political photo stunts has entered its semi-final right now online. You can vote. It's the Edstone versus Train Gates. Jeremy Corbyn sitting on the floor of a train. That's in semi-final one. In semi-final two, it's an all-food affair. It's Alex Salmon feeding a Solero to a young woman. And Change UK eating at a Nando's. Can Change UK win? Could it be the first thing that Change UK have ever won? Go online and vote now at twitter.com/MattJolly on my Twitter page. But what we thought we would do now is take a look at some of the best and the worst at photo stunts. What makes a great photo stunt? Is a picture really worth 1,000 votes? And how bad is it when things go wrong? Join me now for a trip down memory lane as I speak to the brains behind some of the best and worst stunts of recent years. I've also been delving into the Red Box podcast archive for tales of Dave the Chameleon, who couldn't actually ride his bike, why Boris Johnson was kicked so hard by a press officer his leg bled, and why did Nick Clegg recreate a pop video in the streets of Gravesend? But first, top hats. Because if there's one thing that the Labour Party loves doing, it's dressing up to mock posh Tories. Only a few days ago, a group of junior Labour staffers were giving masks of Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock and told to march on Downing Street carrying large brown envelopes of cash. But one of the best, or at least one of the most memorable, we need to go all the way back to the Crewe in Nantwich by-election of 2008. Gordon Brown was Prime Minister. It was a big election test for David Cameron as Tory leader. And Labour election strategists decided to dispatch some young, poor staffers dressed in top hats and tails to mock what they saw as the posh Tory leader. 13 years on, one of those wearing the top hats is now a Labour MP, Alex Norris. I caught up with him earlier and asked him how it all came about.
Well, I mean, I was young. I just started working for the Labour Party, very keen to catch the eye, as you'd imagine. I was sent to Crewe, which I was really excited about. You know, my first ever parliamentary by-election, a foot soldier, delivering leaflets, knocking on doors, all the things you'd expect. And then one evening, one of the senior staff said, oh, look, we've got this stunt. We need two young guys to do it. So obviously my hand had shot up before I had even really thought about even knew what I was signing up for. And then I was encouraged by someone who's now a senior parliamentary colleague who said, oh, yes, definitely, Alex, we're very good at this, but I might leave him nameless for now.
Come on. No, it's only you and me. It's a time to share this opportunity. Who was it who egged you on in the top hat?
He, to be fair, he knows that I blame him. Ironically enough, because I'm a member of the Shadow Health team, it's my now boss on the Shadow Health team. It's Jonathan Ashworth's fault.
Oh, very good.
And I'd like the record to show that. and, of course, in general, it wasn't a very good stunt. There wasn't much elegance or thought in it. And then it particularly backfired because I myself went to private school. And I'd like to take this moment to say, because I got absolutely savage for this as a hypocrite, that you know, I did go to private school. I went on a free place. I come from a low-income background, not dissimilar to much of my constituents. So I always felt a bit hard done by that element to it. But I learned an awful lot, which is, above anything else, before you say yes to something, make sure you know what it is.
And not, I mean, when you say it wasn't the most effective of stunts, obviously the Labour Party went into that by-election with a majority of 7,000, and it came out of it having lost by 7,000. The Tory candidate getting almost half of all of the votes cast in the by-election. Do you think these stunts ever work? Can you think of any of these sort of things which do end up resonating with voters?
No, in general, I think that the gimmicks are generally pretty bad. I think people are a bit more sophisticated than that. I mean, I would like to think there are other factors in play about that swing against us beyond just my own conduct at the by-election. I certainly hope so. I learned a lot from that about, you know, there's a time for kind of primary colours in your campaigning. It'd be very, you know, kind of very forceful and clear about the message you're trying to express, but I think you can do it better than dressing up.
I mean, last week, the Labour Party had another go at this, where people dressed up, I say dressed up, they put on some sort of masks of Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock, that sort of thing, walking up Whitehall carrying big wads of cash. Is this just something that actually just makes sort of party activists, people at Labour HQ, feel like they've done something? I'm not sure it sort of has a massive impact attitudes.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it could be a creative way of drawing attention to the story. Perhaps we wouldn't be talking about it if they hadn't. I don't think party activists or certainly party staffers look forward to it or think, oh, great, I'm going to be dressed up as a chicken today, which is always a favourite of the Tories. So I think it's probably quite the opposite. I dare say that it's someone like me somewhere comes up with the idea and some poor staffer gets press ganged into doing it. I think I'm probably glad that I'm probably not at the point where I'm likely to be put in a chicken suit. I think that's probably good news.
That's the now Labour MP, Alex Norris, there. But talking about the chicken costume. Now, what could it possibly be? Of course, the Mirror chicken. It was way back in 1997 when the Mirror first sent out a then headless chicken to mock a Conservative during the election campaign, and a political tradition was born. Well, one man who knows the chicken suit inside out is Tom McTague, regular on the show. He's now a writer at The Atlantic. But he started out as a junior reporter on the Mirror, where the job description demanded putting on the feathered costume.
Well, I realised I basically didn't know what I was doing as a young journalist, and I was convinced by a wise old hand to apply for the Mirror trainee scheme, which was one of the best things I'd done. And part of that is they send you around the country and you learn, you know, you learn what you're doing, you learn your ropes, and then you come back to London and they immediately dress you as a chicken and send you out to Oxford to go punting on the river and to dress in top hat and tails and a chicken suit and to chase George Osborne and David Cameron around London and Ken Clark over Westminster Bridges. And it was, you know, mortifying and petrifying and embarrassing and kind of great fun as well as a young hack. And I was just lucky or unlucky that it coincided with the 2010 election. So that's how it came about. And I don't think I ever really fully understood what I was doing, why I was dressed as a chicken, like what the point was. But, you know, you're just desperate for a job. So you just say, yes, boss, and off you go.
And what happens when you interact with politicians? Because it feels like one of those things that for it to work as a photo opportunity, you know, the chicken appearing behind, you know, a Tory politician out, you know, on the campaign trail, you sort of need the Tory politician to play along as well. And you just want the photo. But then obviously there's lots of awkwardness of essentially you're just standing around in a chicken costume.
Yeah. It's a lot of work for it. It felt like for not much end product. It's all about the photo opportunity, as you say. So in Oxford, you can kind of get away with that just because it's Oxford and it's, you know, the pretty background and just you on a river in a barge dressed as a chicken is enough. You know, it's funny and you go, or you trying to get into the place that David Cameron got his top hat and tails for the Bullingdon Club. That's enough. So I remember chasing George Osborne around the Royal Albert Hall. So we knew he was going there because there was some event. So you go down. And once you get down, you and the photographer, you realise there's, you know, like hundreds of entrances to this, to the Royal Albert Hall. So you just have to like pick one side of this circle. And then Osborne, you know, just basically changes plans and goes in a different entrance. So you just, you know, it was a completely wasted day. But it's the kind of, I remember thinking about Osborne that he was quite nervous about that. Like they seemed to go out of their way to avoid any confrontation with the chicken. And I think if they had, I was just a very young and probably not very confident chicken. If he'd just sort of taken my head off and said, well, go on then, ask me the question, I would have been stumped. Cameron, I think, once got a bit frustrated with one of my colleagues who was also doing the job and took the chicken's head off and asked that very question. And it kind of fizzled out, I think. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't much of a story.
You sort of puncture the thing. You know, you just said, well, I'm not playing this game. What do you actually want? And, yeah, the poor trainee in the chicken costume. I don't know. I was just doing as I was told. And of course, there's you know, you're in good company for this, because one person who also put on the chicken costume was Lee Kane, who then went on to be director of communications in Downing Street for Boris Johnson, which is quite an interesting thing, from chasing Conservative politicians dressed as a chicken to basically it being your job to make sure nobody gets anywhere near your Tory leader.
Yeah, and I think that I've thought about that. And I remember going in to see Lee in his sort of grand office, director of communications in Number 10, and you know it's this huge thing, and there's a PA in there, and there's you know, you're overlooking the Downing Street Garden, and on the wall he had a framed a picture of the Mirror chicken front page that the Mirror had used when they realised that Lee Kane they'd once employed Lee Kane as the chicken. So he seemed to take it in good humour. And I thought about this as well, because Boris is probably the one politician not the one, actually, alongside a few others, who would have had the confidence probably to have dealt with it very well. Like, my sort of chicken moment was coming up against Ken Clark, who just could not have cared less and just sat there as I approached him, as he was having a sandwich on the other side next to the Thames, I think with a Sun reporter. And he was just so nonchalant. And I said, you know, I was sort of like flapping behind him and trying to get these pictures. And he just was fine. And then I said, can I sit on your lap? And he said, no, you can't, you cheeky bugger. And and sent me away.
That was Tom McTague there talking about being the mirror chicken. Now, before that, we heard from Alex Norris, the Labour MP, blaming Jonathan Ashworth many years ago for getting him to dress up in top hats. John Ashworth, the shadow health secretary, has been in touch. Ha ha, how dare he? He says, in fact, I'm pretty sure Alex Norris turned up for work dressed like that every day. So there we are. John Ashworth insisting it wasn't him. It's funny, isn't it? People always say it wasn't them for the bad ideas. They take credit for the good ones. Still to come, we'll speak to more people behind some truly bad ideas, including David the Chameleon, the costume on a bike, while Boris Johnson's leg ended up bleeding, Min Campbell pointed down a toilet, and Nick Clegg in a Carly Rae Jepsen video. We'll do all that next.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, Matt Chorley on Times Radio.
Yeah, we're doing the World Cup of political photo stunts all morning. In the semi-finals, we've got about half an hour left on this. The Ed Stone is beating Jeremy Corbyn sitting on the floor of a train in semi-final number one. And Alex Salmond Solero is currently beating Change UK in Nando's. Change UK not winning. Who'd have thought? You go online, Matt Chorley, on Twitter to vote in those right now. But let's talk about one of my favourite ever political stunts, Dave the Chameleon. So this was some time ago. Theo Burcham, who was a Labour strategist, appeared on the Times Red Box podcast and told me about how Labour's then obsession with polling gave birth to Dave the Chameleon.
Upon David Cameron when he first became leader of the opposition, and we had done the kind of focus groups and polling. One of the things that came back was it really cut through that moment when he cycled into Parliament, but his bags were brought by a chauffeur driving along behind him. You know, it was a classic example of bad story with an image that stuck in people's minds. And the other thing that they felt about him was that they didn't really trust him. They felt he was a chameleon. That was the animal they described in these focus groups. You know, when the kind of classic thing a focus group says is, tell us what kind of animal this person is, and chameleon came back.
Once upon a time, there was a little blue egg. It didn't do very much. It was, after all, just an egg. But then one day, a tiny crack appeared, and David the Chameleon burst out into the big wide world.
We wanted to double down on that, and we ended up with a thing where we're like, well, these are the two things. We had a man in a Dave the Chameleon blue lizard costume who was going to cycle on a bike, and we had a photo op for this. And we had this elaborate suit made, which, of course, didn't change colour. So the whole point of it being a chameleon was lost. It was just a big blue...
He was just a true blue lizard.
It was just a big blue lizard. And we put a bicycle helmet on him. But then when he got on the bike, he obviously couldn't cycle the bike because he couldn't see and he couldn't balance wearing a large... So the bike was kind of to one side, and then he was standing there with this holding, with this helmet on. And it was only when the photographers were there and I could see them kind of one asking the other, like, what is this about? What is the blue lizard thing? That I kind of realised we've completely gone too far here. This is totally wrong. I mean, that wasn't the worst of it. At one point, we had an actual live chameleon in the office that we had rented from someone on a daily basis. And it was just when we were experimenting with cool new things to do online, one of the agencies that we'd worked with said, you should have a live video of a chameleon. People love watching cute animals. This will go down storm on social media. So in the office, we had a video camera just filming a chameleon in a glass box. And after the Dave the Chameleon thing, where like all the journalists like, what the hell is this? I came back and I was like, this has to go. You know, this. But yeah. It can get ridiculous.
To learn more about this cunning little chameleon, visit davethechameleon.com. Then tune in next Thursday to BBC One at 6:55 p.m. or to ITV or BBC Two at 6:25 p.m. to see more of Dave's adventures.
I'm not sure if that website is still live if you go to that, but needless to say, it was not an absolute triumph for the Labour Party. Well, even, never mind costumes, even the most basic photo opportunity can go wrong. Just a walkabout, and lots of politicians were doing this week, a walkabout can be tricky. This was Katy Perry, who was Boris Johnson's press officer when he was running to be mayor, describing how they were out and about one day and she could see trouble ahead.
Well, I had a moment that could have gone wrong with Boris on the election campaign when we were in Romford Market. And all these snappers were running towards me at pace. And I looked around and I said, can we move on now, please? He said, oh, hold on a minute. He doesn't like being told what to do like that, you know. In the end, I kicked him with my shin, with my heel, so good that it drew blood. He later said to me, don't ever do that again. But he said, well, ouch. And I said, just move now. And we moved away. And the snappers came running forward and said, you know, you did really well there. But we got away with not being on the front page of the Times the following day with a picture of Boris underneath erotic underwear still.
Well, there they are. That's what happens when a walkabout goes wrong. That didn't actually make the World Cup. One that did, which I included and crashed out in the first round, is one of my favourites of the sort of the standard photo op. Comes from back in 2007. This is James McGrory, a former Lib Dem spin doctor, telling the story of what I call simply Ming Campbell pointing down a toilet.
It was a Lib Dem conference, and he was looking at... It was either a caravan or a motorboat.
No, it was an eco-home.
It was an eco-home, that's
right. An eco-home in Brighton.
And obviously, when you go to an eco-home, you have a look around. I mean, not very big, so there's only so much to look at. And all the snappers who were there were shouting, point at the toilet, Ming. And obviously he did, and all the headlines the next day were Lib Dem chances down the Swanee. It was an absolute gift to headline writers.
And what was amazing, I remember speaking to photographers afterwards and said... what were they thinking? And they said, I don't know. And it was the only room they took us in to take photos. And it was in this sort of eco toilet, which had, and there were lots of questions about Ming's age, and it had sort of like disability bars on the walls with a picture of him pointing down the toilet. I mean, his images go. It was a
it was a corker.
A particular cracker.
There we are. That was James McGrory telling the story of Ming Campbell pointing down the toilet. The Lib Dems often try much harder when it comes to... That's just the sound of a toilet filling up. The Lib Dems often try much harder with photo opportunities, the hope of getting noticed. Willie Rennie, in particular, is the party leader in Scotland. Blumming loves them. Regularly seen with animals, big props or costumes, or often all three. Willie Rennie, with some pigs mating behind him in an interview, was one of the early casualties of the vote online, the World Cup. In the 2015 election campaign, Nick Clegg was seen posing with a three-legged hedgehog, small, prickly, endangered and prone to going round in circles. The Lib Dems never managed to bounce back. Maybe they should finally release one of the great unseen political stunts. Now, 4 years ago, I spoke to the former Lib Dem press chief, James Holt, about the video that we all want to see.
You were blamed or accused of being responsible for the decision to get Nick Clegg to record a scene-by-scene recreation of the music video of Carly Rae Jepsen's... What was the song?
Oh, no, it was I Really, Really Like You.
I Really, Really Like You. Now, and the original music video stars Tom Hanks.
Yes, it does. Yes.
What was going through your mind when you thought, let's get Nick Clegg, at that point, Deputy Prime Minister,
he was
running for re-election, to get him to walk through the streets of...
Gravesend.
Gravesend.
Yeah.
High-fiving...
Yes.
...dancing girls.
Yeah. And there was a ping-pong bat, there was... We did a scene in a hotel room. Yeah, the whole shebang.
Why?
I like to think of it now probably as my Ed Stone moment, except that I had colleagues that stopped me from making it public.
We'd love that to be public.
Yeah, I know that you would. I know that you would.
How much has Nick Clegg offered to pay you to make sure that never comes out?
He wouldn't need to, you know, I am...
Your loyalty still stands.
I am totally. And, you know, when we've talked about stuff leaking out and all the rest of it, this, once again, we managed to keep this entirely quiet until... Nick mentioned it in front of you.
He did. No. And then I put it in the newspaper.
Yeah.
It is so good. Look it up. Nick Clegg, Carly Rae Jepsen. The video, it's a Tom Hanks video, which he recreated scene by scene. Now, James Holt there describing it as his own Ed Stone moment. We couldn't possibly talk about TV political stunts gone wrong without discussing the Ed Stone, which is currently... I think it might end up winning, actually. Anyway, this was Stuart Wood, now Lawwood, of course. He was in Ed Miliband's shadow cabinet, and he was there for the Ed Stone.
Well, my involvement was standing at the side of in Hastings watching it get unveiled with the guy who sculpted it standing next to me saying, don't you think it's a good bit of work? And I was saying, it's, you know, great bit of sculpture. And then just
which
thinking,
just goes to show that politicians will lie when needed. And do you know where it is now?
I have no idea where the Ed Stone is now, no.
Well, if you do know where the Ed Stone is, get in touch, 8722, start your message with the word Times. Yeah, that'd be lovely to find. One of the great, rarely remembered stunts that we're going to talk about. You need to go right back to the turn of the century. Imagine it. William Hague as Conservative leader. The party needed something eye-catching at party conference. Our very own Daniel Finkelstein picks up the story.
When I was working for Michael Ancram as the chairman of the Conservative Party, it was decided, I think rather foolishly, we ought to try to distract attention from fringe meetings by holding, as a party, our own fringe meetings. So a proposal was made that we ought to do a number of things, one of which was going to be a bonfire of regulations to be held on the beach or on the seafront in Bournemouth. And I did start by saying that it was a little bit difficult because we hadn't actually got any regulations that we'd decided that we wanted to get rid of. So what would people actually put on this bonfire of regulations? At which point someone else suggested people could bring regulations and throw them on the fire. I said, I don't know about anyone else, but normally when I come to conference, I leave my regulations at home. So I didn't think that idea was going to work. At which point someone chipped in and said, that we'd have to make sure people had something for lunch while this bonfire regulation was going on. And my colleague Rick Nye suggested we have a barbecue of regulations. we proceeded with this idea despite my protests, and they had to abandon it in the end because it turned out that having a bonfire of any sort was actually against regulations. So we couldn't have a bonfire of regulations, instead of which it was decided that what we would do is have a dustbin of regulations. And the Shadow Secretary of State for Education and the Deputy Shadow of State, the Secretary of State for Education, would hurl the only regulation that we had for certain that we definitely wanted to get rid of, which was something called the Education Plan of Plans, into a dustbin that would be held by a member of the Conservative Research Department, and would also launch 100 balloons with the Education Plan of Plans off into the sea from the seafront at Bournemouth. Well, it was an extremely windy day in which the two guests started this extraordinary event. They tried hurling the regulation into the bin. I think just about managed to hit the moving target and then set these balloons off. It's important at this point that I tell you that the Shadow Secretary of State for Education at that time was Theresa May and her deputy was John Burke. Picture it, the scene, if you like, of the two of them hurling these balloons into the wind. But of course, it being very windy, it blew back. And the two of them then ended up batting away these balloons until I could finally get rid of them. This, I didn't think, assisted either our attempt to reduce the number of fringe meetings that causing trouble or the amount of red tape and regulation. And I think it possibly should win the prize as the worst ever political stunt.
I've been unable to find a picture of that. So it may all just be entirely be in Danny's imagination. Loads of you have been getting in touch about political stunts. If you want to vote in the World Cup, go to twitter.com/Matt Shawley. I think you can even vote if you're not on Twitter. So I know some of you have been in touch saying, how do you do it? twitter.com/Matt Shawley. You can vote right now in the semi-final. Peter has found an amazing picture of Margaret Thatcher being bonked on the head by Timmy Mallett, which is particularly good. Paul says, surely the worst political photo what was Chamberlain's Peace in Our Time piece of paper. Nick says, how about Blair and Brown with the ice cream cornets, which is very good. Nigel says he was in Tory HQ. Nigel Fletcher, this is, says he was in Tory HQ when the Labour Party did the Dave the Chameleon stunt. And he showed David Cameron a leaflet of Dave the Chameleon. He laughed heartily and took it home, saying his daughter was a big fan of the character. That was basically part of the problem. Made David Cameron seem very cute. But one political stunt that lives long in the memory, it's also to do with things that politicians wear. Let's talk about William Hague's hat, his baseball cap, worn famously on a log flume. Well, last year I asked William Hague what he would say if anyone else said they were thinking of wearing a baseball cap in public.
Well, I'd say don't do it. Absolutely, I'd say don't do it. Although I would say that I would say these things, they become part of the narrative later, you know, after the event. And again, this can happen in any job, of course, that in any public job, that if it starts not to go well, then whatever photo call you did in the past suddenly starts to look very embarrassing. Or many of them can do. You have to try and anticipate that and avoid those situations. Don't worry about grabbing publicity or the photo each day. You just have to live with the frustration that you're not always in the media, that you can't always command attention. Don't do anything unwise to try and grab that attention, I think is the moral of that particular episode.
Well, that's it for this episode of Red Box. If you've enjoyed it, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. Maybe even leave us a rating because it helps with the mumbo jumbo charts. We release an episode every day, Monday to Thursday, featuring the best bits of my Times Radio show. You can listen to the whole thing Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. It's available on DAB online via smart speaker or on the Times Radio app. If you want to read more about all of the stories we've been discussing, then go to times.radio/subscribe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.